You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
Gentlemen, start your engine!
Triangle Tire, Tires for Life presents Dave's Corner Garage. The following is a paid program. Opinions on the show are always expressed with a certain joie de vivre. Please consult a doctor before listening, as laughter can be infectious. Buckle in, everyone. It's time to get this show on the road. Time for Dave's Corner Garage, your top-down, wind-in-your-hair, Saturday morning automotive thrill ride. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, but right now, love us on Zoomer Radio.
Come on, girl.
Good morning,
Al. Lose it there. Morning.
I don't know. I think you got it.
I think so. Dry throat. You know, you got the heat on now, and of course, the humidity's down.
That's the thing. It's cold outside, and, you know, it was frost outside this morning.
I know. I keep looking at that. You know, I'm working on my kids' winter tires, you know, like not physically, but just organizing it.
Yep.
And it seems to be taking way too long, you know, like the guys are already backed up. Like, I started talking to my supplier weeks ago. And he's going, they're coming, we're busy. And I'm going, like, wow.
It happens, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, there's somebody in my neighborhood who's pasting the hydro poles with signs that he'll come and do your winter tire swaps for you.
In the driveway. Actually, in fact, that question was asked to me the other day because my friend who's a real estate agent and one of my musical pals, he says, Al, I keep seeing these things about retorquing wheel nuts. What's that all about? You know, I don't think I've ever done that, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, at any rate, I had just said, you know, they've made a lot more of it, you know, as a result of alloy wheels. In the old steel days, it really wasn't that much of a problem, but it seems to be now. I also told them that in most cases it was after people did their own wheels and tires. I says,
yeah.
You know, they tend to be a bit frugal and tried to save some money, but in the end, but bottom line was, I said, if it sounds like the wheel's coming off, stop.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. So we have someone who knows a little bit about engineering and race car driving. We have Matt Clark in studio with us today.
Thank you for joining, or thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be joining you guys.
Yeah, so first time on the radio.
It is, yeah. I mean, I've done podcasts and stuff before, but this is my first time on live radio, so I'm excited.
So, Mac, it is important that as a driver, you're in tune with the car, right? You got to be dialed in. So if something feels funny or sounds weird, what do?
You got to trust your gut. And
You know what? There's no radio. You can't just crank up the tunes and say, screw it.
I wish that was like what I could do. You know, just turn it up and you wouldn't hear. But no, you definitely have to trust your gut. I mean, I work with a team of engineers. So whenever there's something going on in the car that doesn't feel too right, you get on the button, you're like, guys, I don't know, you know, and they'll either, you know, tell me I'm crazy or I'll pull in the pit box and we'll figure something out.
Or sounds true.
Yes. Well, I mean, and he would know. I mean, he's an engineering student and a racing driver. And, you know, he races at a pretty high level in those fancy open wheel cars.
Open wheels.
Yes, open wheel. Not, he's up in the upper echelons of motorsport where, you know, me and my guys were just hanging out in sports cars. So
that scares me, having them open wheels, you know, because there's no room for contact.
No, that's probably a bad idea. I'm sure Mac can tell us about that.
Yeah.
And speaking of open wheel and sports cars, we have a little bit of a surprise guest. We have James Hinchcliffe, racing driver, who you may know from IndyCar broadcast, F1 broadcast, and, of course, who's a longtime IndyCar racer and well-known Canadian.
Yeah.
And
Did he ever win the Honda?
I don't know.
Here?
No.
He came close.
Came really, really
times.
Close. Yes.
It's just so competitive, eh?
It is. It's extremely, the IndyCar is extremely competitive. We're racing at Detroit Grand Prix, our AMGs, with our IMSA team. and IndyCar was there.
Yep.
And it was incredibly competitive. Like, our championship's competitive, but IndyCar, that's another level. Super, super challenging.
Well, sure, but when you look at the guy who's in first place and the guy who's in 30th place, and there's only 2 seconds difference, you're going, whoa.
Yeah, how do you measure that
Well, no,
difference?
And they measure hundreds of seconds, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, between your first five, it's like not even a half a second. You're going, how did they do that?
Yeah, exactly.
And all right, and speaking of racing and stopping people from racing.
Stopping people from racing.
We have our friend Sean Shapiro on the show. So we're going to have him a little bit later on. He's going to be talking about winter tires, of course, and how you should drive and which rules you should observe, which is pretty much all of them. And so it's going to be a racy show, whether it's stopping people or figuring out how to go faster. We're going to have it all here for you. We're going to take a break right now, and then we'll be right back.
Welcome back to Dave's Corner Garage. I'm Brian Max in studio with Alan Gelman and our pal Matt Clark, racing driver, engineering student. And you go to probably the finest automotive engineering school in the country.
I don't like to brag, but I would say so. No, Ontario Tech is a newer school, and I'm super lucky to attend, and they have great facilities. So I'm in my sophomore year, so two or 3 years left, depending on the racing schedule,
right?
And
yeah.
Hopefully we'll get that ring.
Yeah, how do you find it? How do you find balancing school and racing?
It definitely is a little bit tough. Your schedule is packed, especially in the summer, right? Because, you know, you have the month of May, which is a big thing in the IndyCar world. And then we're traveling, you know, almost throughout that entire, like, March to September window. So keeping, you know, school a priority while also trying to perform at a high level at the racetrack, it's difficult, but I try to manage my time. Time management is key.
Are you, is the school knows of your racing career, I guess?
Yes. However, I have found in university, it's a little bit, you know, more difficult to get accommodation.
Oh, okay, that's what I was going to say. Are they helping you out there? I'm saying,
not really. Not really. No.
It's not my job. It's your job. Okay, you figure it out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, I think they have so much going on and so many different students with, like, you know, different reasoning for being away or whatever it might be.
Well, in most cases, though, are not all your lectures still online?
No, actually, like, all my stuff is in person. So I only have one online class. I'm taking it, you know, this semester. It's the first time I've done an all online class in university so far. So it is all in person. So it's tough. I mean, you go away for a week, you come back, like, you have no idea what's going on in your differential.
Oh, no.
Class.
So I would have thought, well, we had the cameras, so just let them roll, you know, and
yeah.
So you could access at any time. But they're not doing that.
No, I wish they did. They do post, like, lecture notes and stuff like that. So it's not too bad, but it's not ideal.
All right.
Now, explain to our listeners the level of racing that you do. So you're on the what is known as the road to Indy.
Yes.
So you race open wheel style cars that are, you know, look like Indy cars. But where are you in the ladder?
It's a good question. I wish I knew myself. No. So I am two levels below IndyCar. So it's kind of like a ladder system. I'm on the third rung of the road to Indy. There's, you know, four or five rungs. So Indy Lights would be my next step, then IndyCar after that. So hopefully we're looking at like a 2 or 3 years will be my IndyCar debut.
Mm-hmm. And you're still, I mean, you're a university student. You're still young.
I got time. I'm 19 years old. So.
Yeah.
All right, well, backing up. When did you start racing?
I started when I was 11 years old, which is actually a little bit late for someone that wants to get into it professionally.
Right.
Some kids start when they're like, you know, 4 or 5 years old in karting. Most young drivers start in karting, and it came from my dad. He was racing, and I kind of grew up around it.
So he was a racer?
He was, yeah. Like, only, so believe it or not, like, high-level go-karting is actually a big thing. So, like, he went to the World Finals 5 times. Like, he won the Canadian Nationals 3 times.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I don't horn too much because, like, it gives him a big head, but...
Because I'm just thinking it's the go-kart track in cottage country, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah, exactly.
Don't hit anybody, otherwise you're disqualified. But this is professional racing.
Professional-level go-karting.
Wow.
As silly as that might sound to some people, yes.
Yeah. And the guy who just won the NASCAR thing, Blaney, his dad was a racer his whole life. And so that's how he grew up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of odd because is everybody had super things to say about Dave and what a nice guy he was. But ultimately, he didn't win a whole lot of races, you know.
NASCAR is very competitive.
Yeah.
But
it was enough to instill in his son, you know, all the importance of,
yes,
you know, learning the track, learning about the cars, learning about, you know, how to do it and be a gentleman. But at the same time, you know, got to be aggressive and you got to want to get to the front. and how to do it wisely rather than, especially again, you know, you're talking open wheels. There's not a lot of room for messing up.
The error margin is definitely small when you don't have fenders.
Right.
Yeah, stuff can go bad pretty quick. So you got to be careful. And there's definitely a level of respect out there, you know, when you're racing guys wheel to wheel. And, you know, you want to beat them. But at the same time, it's like, you know, okay, we know the risk. We understand that. And we want to finish the race.
Well, and two, I mean, there's a cost involved. You can't have, it's costly if you're going to keep wrecking every week, right?
Yeah, can't be going through your crash damage budget in the first, you know, two races of the season, no. At least in my case.
Oh, there is an allotment, is there?
Well, not really.
If you're smart about it, you do establish a crash budget.
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. And no insurance, unfortunately.
Oh, no, that's you can get insurance.
It's complicated.
Oh, yeah, it's complicated and expensive, and we carry it on our AMGs.
All right, so the level you're at now is just below the lights, you say. Mm-hmm. Is actually a broadcasted? Like, how do people see that kind of show?
It is. So it's on YouTube. It's a okay. YouTube broadcast. It's called the USF Pro Championships. Like, the Road to Indy was recently rebranded. So it is a bit confusing because there's, like, three rungs that start with, like, the word or letters USF. So, like, mm-hmm. explaining this to people is very, very difficult. But I'm in a category called USF Pro 2000. So we live stream on YouTube. You know, usually it's like 700-ish viewers. And it's a good live stream. I mean, they do a really good job.
And how many horsepower are those cars?
Just under 300.
And it only weighs about 1,500 pounds
or light.
Something?
It's light.
No, lighter than 1,500 pounds.
Oh, that's why they call them Indy Lights, I guess. Eh?
Yes. Yes.
That'd be pretty fast. All right, well, we got somebody special coming up after the break.
Yeah, after the break, we've got James Hinchcliffe. Got some news racing with the Canadian race team in 2024.
All right, Ashley, we got to run. So jack up the tires, and we're going to do a tire swap. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Dave's Corner Garage. I'm Brian Max in studio with Alan Gelman and racing driver Matt Clark. And joining us on the phone is another racing driver. Who knew? James Hinchcliffe. James, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you guys doing?
Fantastic.
You told me Dana Kirkpatrick was coming on board.
Sorry to disappoint, fellas.
Well, after that, James, the reason we're talking today is because you actually are going back in a race car next year.
I am, believe it or not. Who'd have thought? But no, it's exciting to get the deal done. You know, we've kind of been, I don't know what the best way to describe it. Let's call it flirting with the idea for the last few seasons about, you know, getting involved in IMSA and doing something with the FAF group, and to be able to kind of put together a package for next year with the the change in manufacturer going over to McLaren, and I'm going to be joining the regular drivers for the three endurance rounds. It's exciting, man. I'm looking forward to it. Great Canadian team. Canadian driver on board, Canadian tire and Canadian partners on board. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So you're like the ringer, the long distance ringer. Is that it?
Yeah, that's right. That's
perfect.
Right.
Perfect. Cause I follow the roundy round guys, you know, and when they got a road course, they're going, oh, I hate that friggin' road course. You know, I only turn on how to turn left and how are you going to change that? You know? So they bring in these outside professionals, which they lovely call ringers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, James, the question that's on my mind is whether FAF is committed to the plaid race car livery or otherwise. You have any idea if the race car is going to be plaid next year?
I do have some insider info on what the livery is going to be, but I'm sworn to secrecy. So you'll have to just stay tuned to see what it's going to look like.
Well, we'll see it. We'll see it in Daytona. That's for sure.
I think it'll be interesting to see whether it.
Oh.
Sorry, James, didn't mean to cut you out there. I'm interested to see in Daytona what they show up with, because that plaid livery, I mean, it really was a hit. Everyone loves it.
Well, it's part of the team's identity, right? So I think that you know, when you're switching manufacturers, everyone's kind of got their own rules and things they have to they have to follow, guidelines, whatever. But the team identity, as you say, Max, got, you know, it's been pretty tied in with the plaid, and the fans seem to love it. I think it's one of the most fan-friendly teams on the grid. And so, you got to keep the fans happy at the end of the day.
And there's, you know, I mean, in all seriousness, James, I think there's a little bit of pressure because, in the last few years, FAF has been extremely successful, won multiple championships, lots of big races. So, you know, you've really are going to be under the gun when it comes to racing at Daytona, for starters.
No doubt. I mean, you know, when you have that kind of pedigree behind you, there's always going to be expectations. That team has done an incredible job over the last sort of 8 years of winning a lot, like you say, championships, big races, whatever. The manufacturer switch is a big deal. You know, they've been running Porsches since inception, and this is the first time they're going racing with anything other than that. So there's a lot of learning to do, certainly from the team side. You know, from my side personally, I've not done a ton of GT races in the past. I've done a couple. I've done Daytona a few times in GT cars and done some touring car stuff. But we got a couple pros that are going to be great teammates that I'm excited to learn from and work with. And look, I've got a lot of faith in this group to be able to get on top of a new car and this new challenge and still be running up front.
James, sorry, just from a mechanical background, which is mine, a mechanical question, I should say. So when they change manufacturers then, do they let go to techs they have, or do they just say, you just got to bone up on this new stuff? How do they normally do that?
No, yeah, it's the same guys that are just having to learn a whole new car. You know, I mean, anything mechanical, we should probably defer to Mac. He's the smart one in the room. You know, at the end of the day,
so your car chief is your car chief. Yeah. Well, yeah. But at such a high level, I mean, I would have thought that if you had the expense and there was a guy, you know, like he's got way more experience. Not like, hang on, we got to figure this out. You know.
No, there's definitely factory support that also comes with it too, right? Like track side.
Okay.
So all the big manufacturers, you know, they have a presence there, and they'll definitely help you out if you're running their car.
Oh, good. So there's a helpline.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got some insider knowledge from some people that have been running it. Because, look, at the end of the day, the McLaren wants that car running up front as much as the team does. And so they're going to help out with all the knowledge they've had from running the car for the last few years. And it'll definitely have some support from England.
Perfect.
Yeah, James, so what's on the rest of your calendar this year? Obviously, you've been you just got back from F1, and you're a busy guy, but what are you doing for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm standing in a wedding today. Marrying off a friend of mine. So that's this weekend's plan. And then have one F1 race left, doing Las Vegas next weekend. And then actually have to go to Europe to shake the car down with the FAF guys in a couple weeks, which is exciting. And then get to kind of take it easy and start planning next year and what we're going to be doing and working on calendars and figuring out how we're going to win Mac an Indy Pro 2000 championship.
James, for our listeners who may not be aware of it, Las Vegas is it's not at the track, is it?
No, it's a street circuit right through the strip. Somehow, I guess money, they managed to convince Las Vegas to shut down the strip.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing money can't do. And it's going to be interesting to see Formula One cars ripping down the strip.
James, we got to go. Thank you very much for joining us. If people want to find you, what's the best way to find you?
Anything at Hinchtown. That's the way to Hinchtown.com, Hinchtown on socials. That's where all the news is.
Fantastic. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you in Daytona. Best of luck in the wedding today, and we'll see you on the broadcast in Las Vegas next weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right. Take care. I wonder if he's going to be doing any gambling down there.
Possibly. I mean, gambling's easy in Vegas.
Now, would he do it in a slot machine, or would he bet on the race?
Insider info, the race. Yeah.
There you go. All right, this is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Dave's Corner Garage. I'm Brian Max in studio with Alan Gelman and racing driver Matt Clark, also engineering student Matt Clark. And joining us on the phone is PC Sean Shapiro. Sean, how are you?
It's me, and I'm doing all right. It's Saturday. Having a good time.
Excellent.
Well, how did you get to work? Where are you working right now?
I'm currently at home, relaxing, yet not at work.
Oh, perfect. I don't know what happened, but the gardener was closed today for an extended period of time. It was quite the challenge to get down to the studio.
Yeah, I was telling Mac on the way down, it took me an incredibly long time. I think almost 40 minutes when it takes normally 20 or 25.
I was using Waze.
I understand that there is a serious multi-car collision involved on that road.
Now, Gardner Expressway, is that your jurisdiction or is that OPP?
The Gardner is Toronto Police. The Gardner, there is a split where it becomes theirs, but you know, we're good about it. We work together. Whoever gets their first wins, something like that.
It's like racing.
Yeah, it's just like racing.
All right. Well, speaking of wintertime, Did I see a winner? Oh, it's coming up, and
it'll be here soon.
And Sean, for so many years, you know, you had people, cars had rear-wheel drive, and people knew you had to put winter tires on. But then when they came out with front-wheel drive and all-season tires, people thought you could drive those all year too. But you're here to inform the crowd that's not the case.
Well, it's not that you have to have them, and you know, places like Quebec, it's actually mandated you must have winter tires. It's certainly a suggestion, and it's something that my wife, the chief at home, forces me to have, and ever since we've had kids, we added that that new option called winter tires. I grew up on all seasons, and I never understood the benefits of a truly winter tire until I got them, and I'll never switch back, so at least not in the winter season. It really does give you a better ability to steer driving traction on the in the colder weather, in the inclement weather.
And, of course, bringing it down to a halt. I mean, you know, that 10 feet could be the difference between you and $10,000, you know.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, what many people do is they put the winter tires on and they forget to take them off for summer, and those don't do well in the warmer weather and wet weathers, oddly enough. So paying attention to your tires is really important, and which ones you use makes it your vehicle perform.
All right.
So, Sean, with winter tires, I mean, obviously people are putting them on their cars now. Some will take a really long time to put their winter tires on, but it's incredibly important, not just for the snow itself and ice and everything else, but also temperature.
Well, that's right. And when the temperatures hover around 7 degrees Celsius, that's when the time to put them on is and keep them on for the season. And it's because the rubber compound that is used stays flexible in lower temperatures, whereas your other stuff will turn to rock essentially and just not work as well. And I shouldn't say that other tires are you know, aren't usable. They're just not as good as a truly winter tire.
And the other thing that needs to change, of course, is your mentality.
Well, a lot of what we find people getting into trouble with is based on their behaviors. And we seem to forget it's that seasonal amnesia. We forget, what is this white stuff falling from the sky?
Right.
And then suddenly people are sliding off the road. And then there's the folks who are overconfident because they have four-wheel drive vehicles and they can get up and go faster, but that doesn't help you stop faster. So we see a lot of overconfident drivers in the ditch. And the best thing you can do in slippery and cold and wintry weather is slow down. It's going to take you longer to get to where you're going, but it's also going to take you longer to stop.
Yeah, I remember years ago we had the old police chief on, and he said, if you have an accident, that will really mess up your time schedule.
That's so true.
So just slow down and take it easy, you know. At least you're going to get there.
The best way to get to your destination in the winter is by avoiding a collision, and that might mean taking an extra half an hour or 45 minutes to get to where you're going. Everywhere in Toronto is already an hour, and in the winter it could be 2 hours, but you need to factor that in, and certainly trying to make up time by going a little quicker is not the way to win this race.
Exactly, because you lose control and you're going to be in the ditch. And all right, now the other thing, of course, is holiday season. People should be watching out for what?
Holiday season seems to be synonymous with enjoying a cocktail or two, and very often we find people who choose poorly and get behind the wheel of a motor vehicle while under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and that, of course, is a recipe for disaster. We see far too many people across the world who die as a result of these collisions that are totally preventable. It's only because someone chose to get behind the wheel of a car while under the influence. And we want to remind everybody that if you're going to be driving, then drugs or alcohol are not something to mix with, especially in a city like Toronto. We have so many other options. You've got transit, cabs, you have Ubers. You even have companies that will pick you up and drive you home and send a second person to drive your vehicle home, because very often we have people who make an excuse and say, well, I had to take my car home because I need it for work tomorrow. And then there's another flip. Just because you made it home doesn't mean you're sober. And people get up the next day and go drive to work and get arrested for impaired driving because the alcohol is still in their system.
Really, eh? It stays that long?
It, everyone is different. It obviously depends largely in how much you consumed.
Right.
But I arrested someone at 9 o'clock who said they drank about a case of beer the night before. And at 9 a.m. when they rear-ended a Porsche on near King and Strawn, they were still over the legal limit and they were arrested as a result.
Wow,
that is an incredible story.
And it's not a rare one. This happens all the time. People don't understand that just because you had a nap doesn't mean you're okay to drive. And it's just a more complicated thing. And the best solution is to simply make other plans.
Now, I watched your show. I was very impressed. You're so good. I mean, Ask a Traffic Cop, you were on with Jerry, and where was I watching you? I'm not quite adept at all the social media now, but you were on YouTube, and you were on TikTok, too, as well, I think?
We simulcast the show on multiple platforms, so whether you're on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitch, LinkedIn, Kick, everywhere. So if you want to watch us, you can use any one of those channels. And yeah, we take questions from anyone who asks, and that's usually a lot of people.
One of the things that I noticed that you suggested was dash cams. You're a big proponent of those, are you?
I absolutely endorse them. I don't care if they're good quality or bad quality, as long as you have something to be an independent recorder of the facts, because when you get into that collision, you have your perception and the other driver has their perception, and very often folks don't stop by and take hours out of their day waiting for police to attend to give their statements. They have better things to do and they take off. So you're left with he said, she said, and what the dash cam does is provide you with actual evidence.
That's great. And on the cheap side, they're not
that expensive, and I get pitched by dash cam companies all the time to review their dash cams on my YouTube channel, mm-hmm. and I just haven't bothered. What I do have a theory, though, Sean, that I find a lot of dash cam users need dash cams pointed at themselves, but that's another story.
So quick story. I did an investigation. I was involved in a fatality, and one person called and said, I got it on my dash cam. They weren't involved in the collision, but they had it in their dash cam. So I went and grabbed their footage. On review, they had dash cam footage of not only out their front window, but they had one that was pointed at them. And although it didn't factor into the investigation, they happened to have themselves texting and driving for the 20 minutes leading up to the collision.
See, a point proven then.
Well, I mean, the excuse could have been we were trying to get to raise the police, and we didn't know how to call them or contact them. That's what we were doing.
20 minutes before the person was injured. They weren't psychic, unfortunately.
Yeah, they put me on hold, and I gave up, and I hung up, and I had to call back again.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I have a very high-end camera. It's 4K in the front, 720p in the back. It's good in low light. It has connections to Wi-Fi, so I can download stuff with a pull in the car. And I spent a pretty penny on it. But those are features that are nice to have, not need to have. And again, you can get stuff for under $100. You may even be able to get something under $50.
Speaking of options on cars, I see so many people driving, especially now because it gets dark earlier, ghost cars. You know, driving cars with no lights on. How do we fix that?
It's one of my biggest pet peeves, and I rant about it whenever I see it, but that's where someone has been duped by their dashboard lights. They believe their system's illuminating the road because they see dashboard lights and their daytime runners are on, which are really just low-power high beams, but their taillights are completely out, and
correct.
No one can see them. They just disappear into the mix. So it's a big problem. I understand that new vehicles are being legislated so their dash lights don't turn on unless their full lighting system is on. I don't know if that's actually come into play yet. And I don't know if it's working. The other half of people are people who have automatic light systems, which are great until you take it to the mechanic, and because they're standing in the garage with the vehicle up on a hoist, turn off the automatic lights so they're not blinded while working on your vehicle. You get your vehicle back, and you never change that button. It's on auto forever, except when it's not, after a mechanic touches it. So you want to always double check and make sure everything's working properly. But it's habit. To get people to do those basic things, it will be better.
That's a great point, because people just assume because they're auto that they're on all the time, when in fact you can manually shut them off.
And you can shut them off.
And I can say at our own shop, we were guilty of that. I mean, I never thought about, you'd think, well, I can't have the lights on when I'm working on it, right? So you'd shut them off. And I had to remind the techs to put it back on auto, because the person driving the car is not going to be bright enough to turn them on themselves.
No, they haven't touched that switch in years, probably.
That's right.
Right?
People kept flashing me, and I couldn't understand why.
I will tell you this, that one of the best hints for me for impaired driving investigations was anyone that had any ghost car on the road was immediately pulled over and investigated for impaired operation by me, and I very often ended up with an impaired driver, because those simple things like turning on their headlights are things they forgot to do when they were impaired.
Incredible. That doesn't surprise me. I was going to say I was going to say about dash cams. A lot of the new cars I drive have that technology built in. So the car I'm driving today has has cameras everywhere, but it has the dash cam function built into the car.
Straight from the manufacturer.
Yep.
Really cool.
Yeah.
I think that's remarkable. And we get that when we have Tesla-involved collisions. And I can't think of a better option for all vehicles to have. I think that would be great.
I just saw that on a TV show where they were trying to find this a car, and then the officer realized that it was a car behind them was a Tesla, and that they record everything.
Yes.
So they found the Tesla owner, got their footage, found the and solved the crime. Amazing. Speaking of solving crime, thank you for joining us, Sean.
Always a pleasure.
All right, ask a cop. You got a question? The other question, too, is people want to keep joining the force, eh? They keep asking you how. Are you got your own recruiting center there?
We are recruiting. I'm sort of the unofficial extension, but trafficcop.ca, every link you'd ever want to know about our socials and recruiting.
And by the way, if you had an impaired charge, don't bother trying to sign up. They don't want you.
That is the thing.
I learned that. Sean, have yourself a great weekend.
You too. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Dave's Corner Garage. I'm Brian Max with Alan Gelman and racing driver and engineering student Matt Clark. It's true.
I love the additional title there. You make me sound smarter than I actually am.
Well, you know, it's not like you're studying English or political science. You're studying something useful.
Trying hard, man.
For useful for a career as a racing driver.
Exactly. No, I think the two will kind of help each other, and that was always my goal. If I don't win the Indy 500 from in the cockpit, I'll be on the pit wall.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, but obviously the mechanical end of things is so important. I mean, the mechanic obviously is the guy doing the adjustments, but it's important that you know how to convey what you're feeling, and as a tech, it's like it's important to get that information right. You know, how often do people come in and go, I think I need an alignment, and I go, what do you mean? They say, well, it shakes on the highway. I said, well, yeah, but that's not alignment. You know, I mean, so and that's a very basic kind of understanding. Mm-hmm. But this way, you know, when like now. In your engineering part, though, but are you talking about car specific?
Yes. So it is like it's an automotive engineering degree. It's the only one in the country. So I'll get a proper degree, but it is an auto eng course. So third and fourth year is very specific. The curriculum actually changes every year to like keep up with modern technology.
Right. So you're learning about steering angles and resistance and just how different things in the vehicle influence how the car is going to drive.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, vehicle dynamics, stuff like that.
Right. And what are the possible symptoms, whether visual or audio, just so you can, you know, talk to the techs working on the car to, I mean, you haven't got a lot of time in the pits, right?
No, it's short. And sometimes the turnaround between sessions is, you know, 1 hour, which might seem like a long time, but at the racetrack, it's not. Let me tell you. So
you want to target the problem area and get her done. Get her done.
Get her done.
Yes. Well, you know, Mac does race in the U.S. and you know they're all about getting her done,
getting her done down there.
So what does your schedule look like for next year?
So it is going to be another year in the USF Pro Championships. I hope so. Nothing's confirmed, but USF Pro 2000. That's the series that we want to do. Contract has not been signed, so it'll be we follow the IndyCar schedule. You know, St. Pete in March, early March, and all the way to Portland.
We'll be there as well. Actually,
nice.
So we'll see you in St. Pete.
I'll come bug you.
Yeah, please do. You're always welcome in our hauler. So USF Pro 2000, you're working on that.
Yes.
And how many races in the calendar?
It is 8, I believe. Okay. Yes.
Now, needless to say, this is not a cheap career choice. It takes a lot of funds. I mean, you know, it's not a free college. And how do you cope with that?
It's tough, man.
So your dad's not a bazillionaire and just got big bags of money to
throw at you. And I kind of wish he was because, you know, it would make my life easier.
Of course.
Dad under the bus already.
I kind of wish. I think everyone thinks hopes their dad is a bazillionaire.
Well, is there a program or something that can help people raise that kind of money, and how do they do it?
There is. So there's two ways, kind of. I mean, Brian, you know lots about this because, you know.
This is what I do every single day.
Part of your
day.
Operation,
yes.
Man. So, you know, trying to fundraise money to go racing is tough because, you know, you're trying to convince people to take their money and they might not ever see it again, right? It just kind of gets burnt up in the engine and comes out the exhaust pipe, right?
it's so true. I think it is singularly the most difficult part of a racing driver's job to, you know, develop those relationships and build those relationships, because sponsoring a race car in the scheme of a brand or a company's marketing mix, doesn't make a lot of sense. It takes the right vision and the right approach to make that worthwhile.
Yes, and I think once you get people to the track and you get them excited and they see what racing's all about, because if they don't know and you bring them to the racetrack, it's life-changing.
It absolutely is. And you know, we found that, of course, you know, this is what I've been doing my adult life, but when you know, especially last year, and we happened to be successful in our couple of outings, but when we brought those partners to the race and they got to experience it, in being embedded inside a race team and feeling part of the team, they were over the moon. And of course, everybody wants to be back for next year. Once you experience the excitement of motorsport, there's nothing else like it.
It grabs hold of you, man.
Yeah.
I think it's like when they tell a car salesman, you know, when someone's looking in the showroom in a car, the most important thing is to get them behind the wheel so they can experience the smell and the feel of that new car. And that really entices them.
I didn't know that. It makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And like Brian is saying, you know, you can talk about racing all you want, but until you get to the track and get a real experience, one of my musical friends actually, who's, I don't know if it's his money or his dad's, but anyways, because he decided to fly to Sao Paulo last weekend for the Formula One race, had never watched a race in his life.
Yes.
And he says, "So Al, do you follow racing? What can you tell me about it?" I said, "Get out of here. Like, you're just going to fly there?" And he said, "And we got the good passes too, eh?" Because all of a sudden he's tweeting pictures of him in the pits. And I went, "Hang on."
Yeah. Nobody gets those.
But when he came back, it was like, "Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. It was incredible."
Yeah. That. I mean, if.
Like the speed, the spectacle. It just, you know, and if you want to entice somebody, that's how you do it.
Hook, line, and sinker, man.
and you know, we do that. I'm sure, Mac, you do the same thing. And, you know, when you have partners, you got to bring them trackside. And there's nothing like the excitement of motorsport when you're at an event.
You got to show them that, you know, that up close and personal, that behind the scenes kind of aspect, right? Get them in the pit lane, get them with the team, meet all of the crew, make them feel involved. Like you said, make them feel part of the team.
Yes. And we do the same thing. We put as many kids behind the wheel of our race cars as possible because there's, you know, it's a wild thing for a kid, especially today. When I was a kid, it was kind of normal car. With race cars today, you've got these fancy steering wheels. Our steering wheels look like they come out of Formula One with all these buttons and dials and all that stuff. Yours are much the same, and it's cool to get kids excited.
They love it. They love it, and then the parents love it, and it creates this, you know, passion for the sport. And whether it's, you know, partners or fans that are walking by in the paddock, anyone that I can grab, I try to get them, you know, into our space and show them what it's all about.
Now, what about on the electric side of things? I mean, you're young. Things are changing. In fact, when I'm hearing the music.
Yes.
I have to stop talking. Hold that thought. We'll get to it right after this break. This is Dave's Corner Garage. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Dave's Corner Garage. I'm Brian Max with Alan Gelman and our pal Matt Clark, racing driver and engineering student. And Mac, you've got a big following on social media, but for our listeners who don't know you, how can they find you?
I'm _ Matt Clark on almost all social media channels. I'm big on Instagram. I'm trying to start a TikTok because that's becoming important in this day and age. So I'm working on it, but that's where you can find me online.
All right. So you started off on go-karts. They were gas cars, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going electric. How many electric vehicles have you driven?
Zero. full transparency.
He's a racing driver.
Can I introduce you to Brian Max here, who's got all kinds. He's got his own fleet, actually.
I saw that. And I think it's interesting, the switch that's coming, because, I mean, like Formula E, you see that stuff across the pond, right? I mean, they even come here.
But I kind of wonder, you know, because one of the things I remember when I used to go to Mosport in the old days is all of a sudden you smell the burning oil. You smell the exhaust. You smell the rubber.
Smell.
Yeah. Well, part of those smells won't be there.
I know.
Well, Al... what's actually happening?
No exhaust, no oil.
No. So in our championship in IMSA, we already know they're going to be going to a renewable or a synthetic fuel.
Okay.
So they've already started that discussion. So I think we're going to see that at our level of professional sports car racing before we ever see a hybrid or an electric car.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, I think this year, one of the big Japanese sports car championships was running on a synthetic fuel.
Okay, but at the same time, Formula Ones have been hybrid for a couple of years.
Yeah, since like 2014, right? It's been a while now.
Right. Yep. Right. What about Indy?
I know there's talks about it.
Okay.
And it's coming in, I believe, this next year. It's the hybrid system. So that's going to be official. Okay. I think it already is. And
is it more of just an R&D thing or it adds extra horsepower? What are they doing?
I think it's going to add. I think the car's going to get a little bit heavier, so they need to add more power. I think that's the idea behind it. And just a green initiative as well, right?
Now, good thing you're still in school.
I know, right? And like I said before, the curriculum's always changing. So, like, we're learning lots about EVs in the third and fourth years of my classes coming up. So it should be interesting.
Sure. Yeah.
And that technology is changing rapidly right now.
Yeah, like every month something, you know, new gets developed and, you know, you gotta learn more about it to really understand.
When I went to school, they stopped talking about checking the hooves and how many oats you have to give the animal. You know,
back when the TV was black and white. Right?
He's talking about the real horsepower days.
One horsepower.
All right, we got to wrap. I want to thank our guests. Matt, again, thanks for coming.
No, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, guys.
Yeah.
We'll have to do this again. And your pal, James Hinchcliffe, who's been helpful in your career.
He has. No, he's mentoring me and such an awesome guy. I'm lucky to have him.
And he'll be on TV next week doing Formula One race.
Yeah, at the Formula One race. So, and of course, we'll see him at the 24 Hours of Daytona in January racing with Pfaff Motorsports.
Right. I want to thank our friend PC Sean Shapiro. So, like, as he said, you know, weather's changing. Call your garage. You can't wait to the last minute because they can't do everybody the same day.
Really?
There's a lube joint that says, we'll do tires while you wait. And they put it on, and I watch it, and I'm going, yeah, it's not quite that easy.
Not an F1 level pit crew down there.
No, not a two-second pit stop.
All right. And, of course, we're going to have to break a little bit early because it's Remembrance Day today.
It is Remembrance Day today.
And, have to remember to do that.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
If you're not wearing a poppy, check it out. You know, we got to thank the people that fought for our freedom and honor them. And today's a special day for that. Ashley, thanks for joining us. Well, you're part of the show. Part of our pit crew, actually.
That's right. That's right.
We got to run. Lingo.
Yes. Yes.
All right. We got to run. Thanks for driving. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safe, and we'll get you next week. Bye-bye, everyone.
This has been an exclusive podcast of Dave's Corner Garage. Heard every Saturday morning from 10 to 11 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.